The content of this podcast should not be considered financial or investment advice. All interviews and discussions are opinions only, and the podcast has been created without taking into consideration the listener's financial objectives, financial situation, or needs. Listeners should obtain independent advice before making any financial decisions. Hello and welcome to this Stockhead podcast. I'm your host, Peter Strachan. Today we are revisiting the Talga Group's progress towards becoming a major supplier of graphite-based anodes to the rapidly expanding lithium-ion battery market. To run us through this update, we're delighted to welcome back to Stockhead Talga's Managing Director, Mark Thompson. Welcome, Mark. Your company has successfully raised about $60 million since we last spoke. Can you tell us and the listener how the company's balance sheet looks today and how you plan to deploy these funds through 2021?
Sure. Thanks, Peter. Well, that number's largely accurate, I guess, pro forma for the end of the quarter. This year is about what we're expecting. So, in the region of about 60 will be the cash balance. Most of it is earmarked to start constructing a electric vehicle anode facility in Sweden, which is our home base for our integrated sort of graphite mine and refinery. This plant will actually be built at the refinery site and it's doing the qualification scale samples for EV manufacturers and battery manufacturers. So that's the bulk of it, and the rest is going into product development on our silicon and solid state type anodes. Expansion of the team and resources into what is now a global sort of commercial enterprise, and also drilling and expansion of our primary resources. It's essentially taking the company to the point where we have partners and funding solutions for the project, and the products in a state where some of our customers can start going a little more public or a little bit more committed with what we're making.
Yeah, so company's got a market cap of about $450 million now. Is that the case? Yeah. Yep. And this plant you're going to be building, is that in effect a pilot plant to get product assurity?
I guess it can be called a pilot plant, but it's mostly qualification. We've already been piloting at different scales with toll partners and at our own plant in Germany. So it's not so much around the piloting of processes, although that is part of it. The bulk of it is because when you make materials that go into batteries for electric vehicles as compared to appliances, laptops, electronics, phones, that sort of thing, well, the automotive industry has got very strict development requirements on quality, and it requires you to have a continuously operating plant that they are auditing before putting orders in for things. So it is more of a qualification plant. At the same time, it will provide us with much larger scale of material for them and is the last step before the commercial plant starts getting built.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense from their point of view. So the company is working with several industry and technology partners as it refines its anode technologies and has received grants to support its development work from government instrumentalities very recently and several ESG-focused funds. When does the company expect to have the technical issues around its anode project at the point where construction and then manufacturing can commence?
Well, I guess in some ways, apart from obviously this qualification process and sort of scaling up of some of the processes, but most of the equipment we use is off the shelf from our suppliers, and you would actually be able to go into production now, but what you're waiting for is the process requires of the buying, the so should say the procurement process of the customers is a multi-year sort of testing of the material, and at the same time the permitting of the sites and the building of the sites take some time. So we're still on track for commercial production in 23, which is also when the demand for the extra volume is required. So it's not like a metal that you can just dump into the market and someone will buy it from you at a certain price. It's entirely based around customized acceptance of the material.
Yeah, I know some of the lithium producers, downstream producers who are making the lithium carbonate have had, you know, basically it's taken 6 months, 12 months to get their lithium carbonate into actually battery plants because they, you know, there's quite strict quality controls.
Yeah, and it's important though to recognise though that that isn't an issue as such. That's just how that industry works. It's a requirement by the customers. That is normal. It's not extraordinary. No. It just differs from the people that work in raw materials and just, you know, base metals. Obviously, it is a different thing on that. But that's because these are more advanced chemicals, and that's the way the current industry is. It's not necessarily an issue.
Yeah, it's not a commodity business, as you say. It's advanced chemicals. So I understand that there are, in fact, two projects that the company's got on the table at the moment. There's the initial anode materials project, about which we're speaking now, and then there's the downstream anode manufacturing project, which would follow, which would be actually going downstream to make the anode product and sell that directly to the battery maker.
It's one just integrated project, really, where you have at one end active, you know, coated anode material getting sold to a battery manufacturer, and everything from there to the ground you own and are actually running. And then you have the scale up of that project over time. And then within it, you have different anode products coming out of it. So you currently have a 100% graphite anode product. Then you also have one with an increased amount of silicon in it coming out as you scale up, and you also have it's more of an R&D level at the moment, but you'll probably have a solid state, which is a sort of combination of your graphite and some other materials in there as a compound.
Yeah.
So it's probably more to see it as one single integrated project that may take place. Different parts of it could expand over different countries over time to take advantage of different economic opportunities in those individual countries. But the overall spine of the whole thing is that single integrated graphite to anode development.
Yeah. So last year you came out with the Vittangi pre-feasibility study, and then we've seen more recently the Nishka feasibility study, which is something which would begin in sort of 2025 and follow on.
Yeah, exactly. And so this is just because the timeframe of these sorts of projects, any sort of resource project, is very many years, whereas the market demand is actually increasing exponentially very quickly. Yeah. So you have to look ahead and start planning things out. And it's very hard. You don't know what the volumes and pricing and everything else are going to be at that stage. But certainly we see enough demand from our customers to support this and many multiples, actually, of what we looked at with Nisca. We actually think we're still being very conservative.
Yeah.
But, the drivers and the tailwinds are extremely strong for that expansion. And I guess I should point out, though, that the Vittangi project PFS is being done now we're completing a DFS on that. That's due next month.
Yes.
The DFS doesn't expand. It can't do anything new. A DFS is just a much more accurate PFS, right? So it's not anything new. That just is on our Nunswara South deposit. And then the Nisca study looked at, well, what if we add, you know, four times that volume in the project? How would we build it? And in future, what we see is integrating them together. So you've just got one single project which would be outputting just over 100,000 tons of anode, which would make it the largest natural graphite anode producer outside China and possibly in the world.
That's great clarity for investors, Mark, and I think that's really, really sewing it all together. Like, that's really useful. So how do you think the anode project would proceed in terms of its corporate structure? Will it require a period of pilot plant evaluation? And you've already covered that to some extent. At scale, or will there be some sort of staged ramp up to full production? And what is expected the capital costs of the anode project? I mean, initially, I think there was a sort of $1.2 billion figure put out for the Nishka project, but I'm not sure how it starts up.
Yeah, that's in the second half of the decade, that number. And I think by the time we get there, we had to, being a scoping study, have plus or minus like 40%. So I think a lot of the plus 40% ended up on the capex. We expect some pretty material reductions in that in future, but that's the way it's got to be written down. So it's actually about $200 million actually for the first commercial project. and for Nunsfar South, which is the Vitenghi DFS. That's what the number was in the PFS. The DFS has to be even more conservative, so you know I wouldn't be surprised if that alters. That's pretty normal, but yeah, it's a very doable number now. Probably 1 to 2 years ago, that would have been quite difficult to look at from a purely banking point of view. Our strategy was to introduce partners to help develop the project, and that would normally take the place. I'm not saying this is what's going to happen, but the discussions are around like a potential joint venture, where you have a joint venture vehicle, you decide what to put into it, what assets to put into it in the mine, the refinery, other things like sales distribution, technology, yes or no. And incoming parties, it's public that Mitsui and LKAB, who are the state-owned mining and technology company, they would at the moment look at, you know, that's the sort of thing they would look at as being partners. And how that affects Talga is that any incoming party that we're sort of selling some of the project equity to, not the company equity, but the project equity to, would be expected to pay for not only their share, but, you know, some of Talga's share as well.
Exactly.
So, to be honest, nothing fancy, just looking at, but we're looking at, well, what's the minimum amount of finance that Talga will have to face the liability of?
Sure.
How do you make the capital you do need as cheap as possible? Balance that up.
You get a carry from your incoming partners. That's the normal.
Yeah, and to be honest, it's fair to say that right now there's actually, you could go 100% like project-based finance with partners all the way to 100% just debt finance with someone, which is not necessarily the way to go. Obviously, you could do a lot of equity too. We're trying to avoid that. So we're looking at the balance with our Morgan Stanley as strategic advisors, and we have had lots of things, I guess, warming up to this point. And the DFS, to be honest, is that we're putting out next month on the project, is not actually for it's not for the investor market. It's a process we have to go through as the part of the project valuation in the funding discussions to finalize things with these partners, other potential partners, banks and other potential financing agencies, sovereign wealth funds, government-related funding. So it's about looking at all of that and giving Talga the maximum bang for the buck while decreasing any risk to development and increasing our leverage to still what we own in the company. And I think in that way, we've got a great mix, because in Mitsui, we've got this Japanese partner that has got existing customers, has got deep knowledge of some of these markets and that we operate in, and has got very good relations to some of our partners.
Big balance sheet.
And then, of course, LKB is the premier partner on the ground, huge shift from their existing giant sort of iron ore and other operations into renewables, into sustainable type related minerals. But of course, being a state-owned entity, they have they own all the mines and infrastructure around us, huge workforce and huge opportunities for working with local stakeholders, and incredible synergies from a cost and operations basis with us. So these are strong partnerships that we have available to now walk through some funding models for the project.
That was part of my question, really, to find out what sort of mix of full equity partner, raw materials supplier, technology licensee, or a combination of the above. And that basically you put all those things on the table, and we'll see how it comes up. What's the best for the company?
Yeah, look, unfortunately, not trying to be glib and avoid everything, but there's, what else can you say? It's a process that you're in, and the opportunities.
But your investors need to know that, it's not some magic out there. It's all being considered, and I think that's a sound policy to move forward with. Mark, how quickly can the Swedish graphite mine that you have be brought into full production, really ramped up to meet your what's required?
Well, so we've been mining. So we've been mining on a sort of up to 5,000 ton basis before in a trial mine, and we've got a currently granted permit to mine another 25,000 tons of ore, which would produce about 5,000 tons of anode. So the extra funding we took in the SPP is earmarked to make that happen as soon as we can, and that material doesn't have to feed the EVA plant, but it can also be part of a scale-up, including an exploration of any early stage commercial scale operations we can do. Mm. The permits for the full scale mine have been in for about a year now and are progressing well. That's about all I can say about that. We don't know when the Swedes are going to grant them. We have targeted next year, like in 22, and that will allow us the time to do what we need to do in time for production in sort of late 23. But it's not like an Australian sort of system where you've got a series of boxes and as long as you tick them, you will get something. Yeah. It's a much more involved of, you know, discussion with stakeholders, government, and all the various government agencies. And that's, and to be honest, we're setting up something that's going to probably, well, I personally feel will be in operation for a lot longer than our studies show.
Yeah, because you've got a lot of resources there as well as the reserves.
It's a very, this will lead on to very, very long-term development, I believe, similar to the in scale and length of time as the iron ore industry is out of Sweden at the moment. And therefore, it is worth getting right. It's worth doing very, very carefully and making sure that everyone's aligned with it. But certainly, there's no technical reason why it can't proceed as planned.
With the funding that you're getting from government instrumentalities in the UK, who will own that technology, and will Talga have the ability to license its technologies to the project when it's up and running?
Good and interesting question. We've already been developing a lot of our anode technologies in the UK anyway, so we own it already 100%. What we're looking at is providing potential solutions for in a post-Brexit world, for the UK to have its own battery production supply chain, which include, we're probably the closest and, as far as we can tell, the best option for getting anode material into, definitely natural graphite anode material into Britain as part of that. So if they're going to do it, it needs some support and it needs exploration of the economics of that as compared to our Swedish operation, not because it doesn't replace it. It's an extra, it's a growth option. And so these studies, the co-funding from the government, sure, if we have someone else set up something and we can license some tech or something to them, but they're actually economic studies to look into the feasibility of building separate production facilities than Sweden in the UK to help electrify their transport industry. And that's just a wonderful growth opportunity. And so it's well worth. And the fact they're helping co-fund it shows, that they're very serious and committed to it.
Yeah, well, there's no doubt there's going to be demand for this product going forward. We've got Elon Musk saying he'd be building electric trucks at the moment, but the trucks are going to have 500 kilowatt hour batteries, and there's not enough batteries, there's not enough battery materials being built to make trucks at scale. So, that's a challenge.
Look, on that subject, we spoke to a company the other day that currently makes trucks, and we knew they were electrifying, but we didn't know they were looking into sort of making their own batteries and so forth. And yeah. When we looked at their demand curves for the second half of the year, you can easily, to be honest, you're seeing between, say, 50 to 100,000 tons of anode needed just for that one company.
Yeah, yeah.
And that currently isn't included in the demand curves within Europe or the world. So to be honest, every month we speak to companies that aren't currently being included in the proposed outlook, the capacity required in the market.
Yeah, and I mean, Tesla's already stopped talking about gigafactories. They're talking about terafactories now. Bigger factories, build a bigger factory.
Exactly. They're talking about going through what will need a total of about 3 million tons.
Yeah.
And that's just the one company. And, of course, they won't actually probably be the largest when it comes to the total volume.
Yeah, so Mark, just finally, I realise we're still a couple of years away from seeing revenue stream, but can you tell us about the structure of the proposed anode sales agreements with the downstream battery giga stroke terra factories that we're going to see in Europe?
Look, the official answer is, of course, not, but I can just speak quickly to a range of things coming up so that maybe you can get a feel. These things are very much unlike normal sort of metal offtake agreements.
Yep.
Some of them are discussions around very long-term offtake, including things like equity financing in the project. Others are very light on, just looking at small volumes in repeated amounts. Some of them are trying to become like some of the car companies want to have cost-plus type pricing. Think methods that have worked very well for their industry, long-term repeatable type revenues on their supply chains. But those sorts of things are not normally done in mineral type developments.
Your downstream partners are likely to be participants in the project in any case, the way the funding is being sort of roped together.
Yeah, there's quite a few things evolving. And I think the best thing strategically is probably to have one or two key players with cornerstoning of, and in those you might suck up a bit of pain on a few deals. It's just depends on the timing. Yeah. And on the balance, you want that to float to take advantage of what we believe will be much higher prices around 23 to 25 when the demand is starting to really start cranking up. We want to be careful to not actually lock in anything, to be honest, because not only ourselves but other people in the market are seeing much higher prices as demand continues to fly.
Brilliant. Okay, Mark, well, thank you for coming in and talking to Stockhead today, and I will look forward to seeing you in sort of April once we've got that DFS numbers out and you're a bit further down the track with all of the arrangements to actually press the button and start building the thing. So thanks for coming in, and we look forward to talking again soon.
Thanks, Peter. See you later.